Occasionally, I have the privilege of recommending people for various positions. A church might contact me to see if I would have anybody that I could recommend as pastor if a church is looking for somebody to fill the vacancy of a pulpit somewhere. In fact, just the other week, maybe 2 weeks ago, I received an email from somebody that I didn't even know, just some organization, I guess, that helps pastors or helps churches find pastors. Anyways, they contacted me to see if I had a recommendation for a church in Michigan. Well, I know of a fella, in fact, a guy who was in my youth group years ago when I was in Michigan, who went up through the youth group, went to college and seminary, and was working as an assistant pastor, and had been working at a couple of other churches, and was now actually the principal of a Christian school. I didn't know if he planned to remain, you know, for the rest of his career as a Christian school teacher or principal, but I thought, well, he might be a good option for that church if this fellow that I'm thinking about is maybe thinking about long-term pastoral ministry. So I recommended him for that position. I would not recommend somebody that I didn't know pretty well and somebody that I couldn't heartily endorse. Now, churches are they differ, but if I thought that somebody was a good choice for a certain church, if they lined up well theologically and philosophically and practically, I might recommend somebody for that church, but I wouldn't do it unless I believed in the person I was recommending. Several years ago, in fact, I recommended a guy for a church over in a little town called Hannibal, and he actually became the pastor there. And unfortunately, he was only there a couple of years before they kind of kicked him out. So it doesn't always work well. The people that I recommend, sometimes they work out and sometimes they don't. But obviously, I would recommend a person for a position like that only if I had a great deal of confidence in that individual. And I don't know if you ever get opportunities to recommend people for jobs or recommend people for a different position. Perhaps there's somebody within your career field or within your business or organization that you have the opportunity, when asked, who would you recommend for this position? And you have the opportunity to say, well, I think this guy would do a good job at it. It's kind of a neat privilege to be able to recommend somebody for a position like that. Well, in today's passage, Paul says a few things about some representatives that he is recommending to the church there at Corinth. These fellows are Titus and then two unnamed men. Paul sent letters back and forth to the church at Corinth with this fellow Titus. And in this case, these two, well, Titus and two other guys are going to be returning to Corinth to collect this offering. As we've been talking about, and what really 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 both talk about, is a collection, an offering that Paul is making for the poor saints at Jerusalem. These people were encountering starvation and persecution, and so Paul felt like the other churches that were a little bit more prosperous could maybe help the poor saints at Jerusalem. So he's collecting this offering. He had talked about it to the people there at Corinth. They had agreed to participate, but as of yet they hadn't collected anything, or at least they hadn't sent anything in. So Paul is kind of warning the people there at Corinth to say, I'm going to send Titus and two other guys. They're going to be arriving soon, and when they do, have your collection ready to go. And he's recommending Titus and these two other guys as reliable, honest, reputable people that the people there at Corinth could trust. You can imagine, let's say we were collecting an offering for something, and some people came in who we didn't know, and they said, hey, we're here for the money. Well, wait a second, we don't even know you people. Why are we going to give our funds that we've collected to you? And so Paul is kind of warning these people and preparing them so that when Titus and these two other guys arrive, they have the stamp of approval from Paul, and they're willing to give their money so that they can take that money then eventually to the poor saints in Jerusalem. Well, the topic here in this passage is financial integrity. Paul is affirming the reliability, the credibility of his colleagues that will be showing up to collect this offering. Well, as we consider money management, that's an important issue even in churches like ours. Like our church, we need to make sure that the people operating, the people who are collecting the funds, the people who are counting the funds, the people who are depositing the funds, obviously we would want to make sure that the people who are working in that area are full of honesty and integrity. People that we can trust, people who have high Christian moral values, because all of us know that in many churches there's fraud, there's waste and abuse, and we don't want to have people collecting the money or counting the money or, you know, depositing the money. We don't want to have fraud, waste, and abuse when it comes to the monies that we give so generously. So it's very important that the people who are involved in finances within the church are people of high moral character. And really, that should be true of anyone, not only people who are involved in the money management side of the church, but people who are involved in any kind of ministry. Frankly, it ought to be true of all Christians to have high moral values, to have high degrees of reliability, trustworthiness, and honesty. All of us ought to be people of integrity that other people can trust. And so what we have here, I think, are some qualities that we see in these men that Paul is sending to the church at Corinth. And in a more broad sense, these ought to be qualities or virtues that anybody who is engaged in ministry ought to have. If we are engaged in Sunday school, vacation Bible school, working in the nursery, you know, playing the instruments, playing the piano, singing in the ensemble, any kind of ministry that we have with children, or frankly, anything that we do here in the church, we ought to have the kind of virtues that we see reflected in these men. And Paul is kind of giving a warning to the church there at Corinth and saying, these men who are coming to collect this offering, these are reliable people. And if we are engaged in ministry, and especially in financial aspects of things, we need to make sure that we have these virtues as well. So what are the kinds of virtues that should be evident in our lives? And as we go through these virtues, we should be asking ourselves, are these virtues true of me? Am I the kind of person that pastor would recommend to go and collect some money from somebody? You know, when I think of who would I send to go, I mean, this is a kind of a weird scenario. Who would I send to go to another church to collect money for an offering? Well, obviously, you'd have to be a reliable person, a person full of honesty and integrity. So we can each ask ourselves the question, am I the kind of person that somebody would entrust to do a job like this? Well, what are these virtues then, and are they true of us this morning? What are these kinds of things that should be true of anybody who's pursuing Christian ministry? The first one is diligence. Notice chapter 8, verse 16, "But thanks be to God who puts the same earnest care for you into the heart of Titus." Now, Paul is going to use the word diligence. Here it's translated as earnest care. It's the same root word as to be diligent. In fact, Paul uses it here in this passage about four different times. The word refers to eagerness, enthusiasm, or readiness to expend energy and effort. A diligent person is working hard at the task at hand, and he's eager, he is anticipating, he's wanting to be involved with that. And so Titus here, it says, was earnest in his care for the people. Of course, he'd been there on at least a couple of occasions before. He'd gotten to know those people, and he cared a lot about them. Now, we all know that we tend to trust people that we know care about us. In fact, Titus, I think, obviously here cared more about the people than he did about their money. We would not entrust our money to somebody unless we believe that they cared about us. They're not going to be using our money for themselves. They're not going to be wasting our money. They're not going to be squandering our money. They're going to be caring for our money because they care about us. So that's a very important quality to have, this earnest care, a diligent care for others. He goes on in verse 17 to use this word again. "Being more diligent, he went out to you of his own accord." Verse 22 uses the same word. "We have sent with them our brother, whom we have often proved diligent in many things, but even now more diligent." Notice where this diligence comes from, though. Verse 16 again. "Thanks be to God who puts the same earnest care," there's the word diligence, "for you into the heart of Titus." Where did this diligence come from? God put it into his heart. Titus had a God-given desire to serve these people. Titus cared about these people deeply, and he wanted to serve them. Well, that's the kind of attitude that we ought to have. If we want to serve God, hopefully God puts it into our heart to have a desire to serve the people because we care about them. You know, Jesus said, they will know that you're my disciples by what? Love that you have for one another. The meeting of the saints, the church, the group of people who come together to honor and serve God, one of the leading characteristics ought to be love for one another. That's what care is. We care for one another, so we serve one another. And here Titus and these other men, they're willing to collect this offering. They're reliable. They're trustworthy, ultimately because God has put it into their heart to care for these people. And so people serving in our church should do so because we care. We're serving God by serving God's people. We want to serve others because we care for others. As I was thinking about that this week, a name popped into my head. A guy who was a student from Northland who came down and served here for several years. His name is John Marino. Some of you probably remember him. He was a young college kid. Now he's grown up. He's married. He has four or five kids. He's a pastor, I believe, in Ohio or something like that. Well, while he was here, he helped out with the youth program. And one of the families that was kind of a troubled family, he really got involved with. And he came down on a couple of occasions and tried to serve this one family in our church. They're no longer here. They're long gone. But John tried his best to help this rather troubled family. And I could see very clearly in the life and the activity of John Marino that he really cared. He did his best to help this, especially one or two kids from this family. Because, you know, he didn't have to. He was a student at Northland doing all kinds of other things, very busy, no doubt. And yet on several occasions he came down, I think at least on two occasions, just on his own efforts, he came down and tried to minister to this family. He cared for them. And basically, when we have a care, when we have concern, earnest care for others is the reason that we serve. Concern for others and a readiness to expend effort on their behalf is a wonderful quality for those who serve God. If you don't have concern for others, that is, you're not willing to expend effort and resources for them, well, then you're really not suitable for Christian ministry, because Christian ministry is all about caring for others. And if you don't have a care and a concern, an earnest care for others, I would have to ask you, what's wrong with you? Because that's what Christians do. That's what Christian ministry is all about, is caring for other people. When I was driving the school bus, I heard the little saying, school bus driving would be great except for those rotten kids. Well, the school bus is for the kids, right? And driving the school bus is no problem except for those rotten kids. And you might say kind of the same thing about church. You know, church would be wonderful except for the people, but the church is the people. So, you know, this is the people that we work with. This is the people that God has given to us to serve. And we serve God primarily by serving God's people. And so anybody who cares, anybody like Titus who has earnest care for God's people, ought to be engaged in service. So how did he express this earnest care? Notice verse 17. He not only accepted the exhortation, that's the first thing, but being more diligent, he went to you of his own accord. So this is expressed, first of all, in voluntary cooperation. He expressed his concern and care for these people through voluntary cooperation. In other words, he welcomed the invitation. He accepted the exhortation. In other words, Paul invited him to go to Corinth and collect this money, or to go to Corinth and serve these people. And so he agreed to do that. He welcomed Paul's request to travel to Corinth. This would be a difficult task, but Titus was willing to take on the charge. In fact, he was more diligent about that. Being more diligent, he said, more eager, this word eagerness, earnestness. He wanted to be involved. He was ready to be involved. He was interested. He was happy to be involved with this. Those who serve must be willing to accept the invitation, to accept the responsibility. Of course, most of the things done in the context of the church are done through volunteer effort. The people who have served today, everybody who's been engaged today in the ministry thus far, have been volunteers, unpaid volunteers other than me. Everybody else has been doing it voluntarily. So this is what we need to do. We need to accept the invitation to get involved with ministry. Sadly, some people express an interest in a task or a project, but then decline to get involved when given the opportunity. Opportunities come up, doors open up, there's an opportunity to serve, and even though they might express an interest in it, they decline the invitation. There was a time several years ago when we had the opportunity to establish a jail ministry. This was, I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago. And there had been a person here at our church who's no longer here who had expressed an interest in being involved with the jail ministry. Even before the jail ministry got started, this guy had come to me and said, hey, we ought to start a jail ministry. So I had called the jail to see if we could get in there and start something, and they declined. They said, you know, we already have somebody doing it. We don't have any need for you. So a little bit of time went by, and then essentially the jail ministry was dropped in our lap. The lady who was in charge of the jail ministry at the time called me and asked if I would take over. So we had been praying about that. This guy had expressed interest about being in the jail ministry or being part of it, and now we had one. We have a jail ministry. So I go to this guy, and I said, hey, guess what? We now have a jail ministry. Would you like to participate? Guess what he said? No. The guy who said, we ought to have a jail ministry, let's get a jail ministry. Okay, now we have one, let's do it. No, I don't want to. Well, there's a difference between expressing an interest in doing something and then actually participating in it. There's another example that I thought of as well. Again, several years ago, there was a fellow who expressed the idea that we ought to have a prayer service. We need more intense time of prayer. We ought to have a service just expressly devoted to prayer. And I thought that was a good idea. I mean, we all need more prayer. And so actually the reason that we started having a prayer service, the afternoon service of the annual meeting, we usually have the annual meeting third Sunday in January, and then the afternoon service is devoted just to prayer. And the reason we did that was this guy suggested that idea. So I thought, you know, that is a good idea. We need to devote, just have one service devoted to prayer for the church, especially at the beginning of the year, beginning, you know, right after the annual meeting. So we did that. Well, guess what? Do you suppose the fellow who had this idea and suggested it to me, did he ever come out to the prayer service? No. And again, this is a person who's long gone. He's no longer here anymore. But he suggested this idea, thought it would be a good idea. We implemented it, and then he did not participate. That happens all the time, or maybe not all the time, but it happens frequently. There are people who have brilliant ideas that they think that they want to be involved with, and then when given the opportunity, they don't follow through. Sometimes people claim that they want to be involved in various ministries, but then given the opportunity, they decline the invitation. The initial interest does not carry through to actual participation. In theory, they'd like to be involved, but then when given the invitation, they decline. Oh, I didn't mean that I would participate. I didn't mean that I would be involved. I didn't mean that I would head this up. I mean that you should do it or somebody else should do it, but I'm not going to be involved. It's my idea, but I really don't want to participate. Sure, we ought to have a work day. We ought to fix things up around here, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to come and participate in the work day. That's the kind of things that happen. Several times people have expressed their interest in meeting with me personally for Bible studies or discipleship, and after a meeting or two, they quit. The initial interest is not accompanied by this word, diligence. Oh, it'd be a wonderful thing if we got together, Pastor, for this discipleship or this Bible study, and we do it a couple of times, and then bang, they're gone. They never show up again. Well, what happened? No diligence, no eagerness, no real desire to serve or to learn or to grow. It's a passing fancy. Oh, sure, we ought to do this. And then, okay, let's do it. It doesn't happen. I remember years ago when I was a youth pastor, there was a particular girl in the youth group who agitated for a certain thing. We need to have special things for this person and their interests. Okay, let's do that. So we put it on the schedule. Do you think she attends? No. Well, this is not what Titus was like. Titus was eager. Titus was diligent. He not only wanted to do it, but he followed through. And given the opportunity, when given the invitation, he got on board. He got involved. He participated. So Titus expressed his diligence through voluntary cooperation, and then he expressed his diligence through personal initiative. Notice the second part of verse 17. He went to you of his own accord. This means personal involvement, being freely willing, taking on the responsibility for himself. So he accepted this exhortation, this invitation. Paul said, can you be involved with this? He accepted it. He embraced it, and he went with it on his own. He took personal responsibility. Those who serve God in Christian ministry freely take on personal responsibility and manage these responsibilities carefully. They accept the invitation to serve, and then they dive right in and get going on a project. Again, sometimes people volunteer to do the job, but then when the time has come to actually do the job, they're nowhere to be found. They say that they'll help, but when you need them, they are nowhere to be found. Diligent people don't do that. They volunteer, they take on a task, and then they show personal initiative. Remember that eagerness, that earnestness to be involved. We want to be involved because God has put it into our hearts to care for other people. And generally speaking, almost all the ministries we do in the context of the church are for the benefit of others. And so it can be difficult being, let's say, a Sunday school teacher, week after week preparing that lesson, dealing with those rotten, snotty-nosed kids every week, dealing with a pastor who doesn't, you know, give you the curriculum on time and all that kind of thing. Well, you know, we keep on after it. We keep doing it because why? We care for our students. We care for the people in our charge. We care for God. We're trying to serve God by serving God's people. And we have that earnestness about us, that diligence about us, that caring for others that keeps us going. So diligence is an important virtue. Paul repeats it here in this short context four times. Diligent people accept the responsibility and take it as a personal duty to make sure that the job is done right. They care about the task and they care about the people. And so if you have a position in the church in serving God, make sure that you're diligent about it. Make sure that you are eager about it. Make sure that you're doing it out of a sense of love, love for God and love for God's people. Do your work with earnestness and eagerness. Show that you care about the people and show that you care about God. So that's one virtue. Let's go on to another, recognition from the church in verses 18 and 19. We've sent with him the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches. And not only that, but who was also chosen by the churches for travel with us with this gift, which is administered by us to the glory of the Lord himself and to show your ready mind. Paul mentions now the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches. He mentioned Titus by name, but this is another guy who is unnamed. Now, nobody knows exactly who that is, but if you have your Bible, especially I think if you've got the King James, look at the very end of the book. It should be, there's a little transcript perhaps at the very end of the book of 2 Corinthians, and it talks about being delivered by Titus and who else? Well, maybe it's not in yours, but I think in the older King James it says delivered by Titus and Luke. So there is a possibility that the person unnamed here whose praise is in the gospel in all the churches was actually Luke. Now, Paul had a number of colleagues that could have fit the bill here, but it seems possible at least that this unnamed individual was Luke. It really doesn't matter that much, but some people think that that's who it was. Well, whoever this guy was, it says his praise was in the gospel. So he's praiseworthy, first of all. He's praised by others. Others recognize that what he's doing is good. He's praised by others. People know what he's doing. He's doing a good job. He's praiseworthy. But notice he's been in the gospel ministry, whose praise is in the gospel. He is participating. He is serving the Lord through the gospel. He is maybe preaching the gospel, teaching, perhaps he's starting churches, he's helping, he's serving in various ways in support of gospel ministry. Participation, one of the marks of the kind of people who are qualified to serve the Lord is that you are involved in Christian ministry. He's not just a spectator sitting around on the sidelines, he's involved. He participates. He wants to support gospel ministry in any way possible. I think of a person many of us know, Larry Pieri. Even though Larry is essentially semi-retired, even though he has significant health issues, he's always involved in witnessing gospel orientation of some way or another. We just got his update, his last prayer letter, and he was out there knocking on doors, leading people to Christ, bringing people out to church activities. Even though he's essentially retired or semi-retired and has all these health issues, he's a guy who's always involved. He's always participating. And participation in little ways will usually lead to participation and responsibilities and privileges in bigger ways. In my own life, I found that if I participated, if I got involved, that opened up other doors. I've said, I think, probably many times before that I was a youth pastor. My first position in ministry really was as a youth pastor at Rock Lake Baptist Church in Lake Mills. This is while I was in school and in college. And really the only reason I got that position was that I was faithful to come out to the activities of the church, to the services, and special things. Things were going on in the church. I just showed up for all the activities. And after a while, the pastor there, Wayne Vodder, asked me if I would be the youth pastor. And I'd never done anything like that. I really wasn't considering the youth pastor position. But he asked if I wanted to, and I said I would. So again, the idea of here's an invitation to serve and going ahead and serving. And that was a very good experience for me. Not only was I studying for the ministry in college, but I was actually doing the ministry alongside of that. That was a very good experience for me. And I kind of cut my teeth, you might say, in Christian ministry while I was there. I made a lot of mistakes. And the Vodders, Pastor and Mrs. Vodder, had to sort of fill in for me and fix a lot of my mistakes. But, you know, they talk about the school of hard knocks. That was my experience as a youth pastor. I made a lot of mistakes, but when you make mistakes, you learn what not to do, and eventually you learn how to do what you need to do. And so that was a really good experience for me, and all of it came from the desire that I had to participate. I wanted to be involved. And a little bit of participation led to more participation, and then more responsibilities and greater privileges, and eventually I, you know, went on to become a regular pastor. And so, you know, when we participate in things, oftentimes people see, oh, here's somebody who is eager. Here's somebody who wants to be involved. Here's somebody who's trustworthy, somebody who's reliable. Let's give that person more responsibilities. Let's give that person more privileges. Let's have that person be in charge because he or she has shown that he wants to be. She wants to be in charge. She is reliable. She's honest and above reproach. So we put those people into charge, we put those people into those positions who have shown themselves responsible to participate. The most suitable for Christian ministry are those who want to be involved, who want to participate. They're actively contributing. They find something to do in the gospel. That's the idea. They're worthy of praise, whose praise is in the gospel. And notice, not only in the gospel praiseworthy, but throughout all the churches, he says. In the gospel throughout all the churches. And then in verse 19, it talks about being chosen by the churches. The word chosen here literally means to stretch out the hand and so to vote in public. We have this vote coming up on Tuesday. Very important thing for us to show up and to vote. Well, even in the context of the churches back here, the churches apparently voted for this person, if it perhaps was Luke or somebody else, they voted that he would be the representative. He would be the one to represent the churches, go to Corinth, collect this offering, and bring it back to Jerusalem. They voted for him to do that. It wasn't Paul's choice, although this was a colleague of Paul. Paul wasn't the guy who chose this person. He was chosen by the churches. So this is a well-known and respected person among the churches. He's selected and appointed by the churches for this task. He was there to help guarantee that this collection would be handled properly. Well, those pursuing Christian ministry, whatever it might be, should also seek validation and approval through the appointment of the church. If the church does not approve and appoint someone, well, probably it's best not for that person to pursue ministry. So approval or recognition by the church is a very important thing. And especially when it comes to approving a pastor, there is a well-known process for that. What do we call that process for approving and choosing a pastor, usually? We call that ordination. I went through the ordination process. Usually most pastors are ordained. And one of the marks of Christian ministry is that recognition by the church. A local church should be able to discern who among them may be suitable for vocational ministry. If an individual fails to gain the approval or recognition of the church, well, then it's highly unlikely that that person is suitable for Christian ministries. I remember sitting in on several ordination councils, and one of the common questions that's asked at an ordination council of the candidate is, if this ordination council decides that you are not suitable for ministry, that is, if this ordination council does not recommend you for ordination, will you continue to pursue ministry? And a lot of these candidates will say, yes, for whatever reason, I'm called of God. God has put his stamp of approval on me, and so it doesn't matter if I get the approval of the church. If the church votes not to ordain me, bless the Lord, I'm still called of God, and I'm still going to continue on as, you know, a pastor. Well, I think it's highly questionable. I think it's highly doubtful that if the church refuses to ordain, If the church does not put its approval on a person, it's probably a good sign that that person is not qualified for ministry. In fact, I would say that one of the qualifications for ministry is approval by the church. And if the local church, or let's say a group of churches, refuses to recommend or refuses to approve of a candidate, well, that's a pretty good indication that that person is not genuinely called of God. Churches ought to be able to recognize who among them are qualified for ministry. And one of the things that we ought to be doing as a congregation is trying to identify the people among us who would be suitable for continued or ongoing ministry. Now, that would be true not only of people helping, let's say, in Sunday school, children's church, nursery, but we also ought to have our eye out for those people, young people coming up through our congregation, who would also be suitable for pastoral ministry. When I was growing up, there was one kid in particular who just was very eager for the things of the Lord. He would sit there with his notebook taking notes all the time. He was there in Sunday every Sunday. He seemed very interested in ministry, and everybody thought that that guy would be going into ministry because he was so involved. I don't know that he ever did. I kind of lost track of him after high school. But I think within the church, there was kind of a common understanding that this guy was suited for Christian ministry. Well, we ought to be thinking as well, people, who around here could we channel into ministry? Who around here shows the values and the qualities and the principles that would lead to that person pursuing ministry? And then we ought to try to channel that person into that. As we see the people with those qualifications, people with these virtues in their lives, several of us ought to be sort of tapping that person on the shoulder saying, hey, have you thought about dedicating your life to vocational Christian ministry? Because it certainly seems as if you have some of these values, you have some of these qualities. I think that you would be qualified to serve the Lord in ministry. Have you ever considered that? Well, when a bunch of people put that kind of that influence into that person's life, maybe they'll start thinking about it. And wouldn't it be wonderful if we had people that were filling the pastoral role from our church? What typically happens is a church needs a pastor. Let's say the pastor, whatever, dies or retires or moves away, and they need a new pastor. Well, where do they get one? They get one from somewhere else. Usually they import them in from somewhere. People who have had no connection with the church, who don't know the people of the church, who often come in and install a whole different tradition or a whole different philosophy of ministry within the church, and then oftentimes the whole thing flies apart and has all kinds of problems because it's a person who comes in with no experience within the church. Well, let's say instead of that model, we try to get a pastor who's been here, maybe from childhood or been here for many years. They know the people, they know the culture, they know the history and the tradition. And when the pastor leaves or dies or moves away, the next person is ready to go and can just step in, and he already knows the church. That would be a very good thing to have happen. And so we ought to be thinking about people in our church right now, young men particularly, who would potentially be suitable for ministry. And we can kind of channel them into that. The church should recognize who among them might be qualified for ministry and then encourage them to, you know, get the training, get the education, get the experience necessary so that when the current pastor leaves, the next guy is ready, at least is kind of in the channel. He may not be exactly ready, but maybe he's on the way. So that would be a wonderful thing. Recognition or approval from the church is a major consideration. The church should be able to recognize, approve, and choose those among them who are qualified for service. And then the third quality or virtue that we'll look at this morning, and we'll stop with this one, that is faithful administration. Another quality or virtue here that we ought to have if we're going to serve the Lord, faithful administration, verse 19. Not only that, but who was also chosen by the churches to travel with us with this gift, which is administered by us to the glory of the Lord himself, to show our ready mind. And then in verse 20, he says basically the same thing at the end of the verse, the gift which is administered by us. Paul and his colleagues were actively administering this gift. What does that mean to administer? It basically means to care for, to take care of. They'll be collecting this offering, and then they'll be securing it. It will be secured as they travel back to Jerusalem. So it's going to be Titus and these two other guys who will collect the offering and make sure that it is secured as it goes back all the way to Jerusalem. They were stewards or managers of this money. They weren't going to use this money for themselves. They weren't going to squander it. They were going to use it for the poor saints in Jerusalem. Well, anyone active in Christian ministry has to know how to administrate. We talked about caring for people. We're involved in serving God because we care about others. But what about caring for the things, the resources that God has given us? So if we are going to be a Sunday school teacher, if we're going to help in the nursery, vacation Bible school, playing instruments, whatever it is, we have to be able to care for the things that are associated with that ministry. Being faithful to do the job and caring for the people and the material that we have in our care. If you don't care about the things of God, well then obviously you have no business being involved in ministry. Some people simply don't care. They really don't care about others, and they frankly don't care a whole lot about the material things as well. They use things, they break them and don't fix them. They drop things, they leave them out and they don't clean up. They don't care about the ministry. They don't care about the church. They don't care about the material things. They don't care about money. They don't really care about people. All they care about is themselves. And so because of that, they're not qualified to be in Christian service. The Bible demands that everything done in the church be done decently and in order. We don't do things carelessly. We pursue the work of the ministry with diligence and good administrative practices, not thoughtlessly or casually. Those who don't care about such things should not be anywhere near Christian ministry. We have to administrate. We have to care for the things of God and care for the people of God. If you are a good administrator and you care about people, well, then you have some qualities that would qualify you for Christian service. So we've looked at three characteristics or three qualities, three virtues that are necessary to serve the Lord. Diligence, recognition or approval by the church, and faithful administration. If you are interested in ministry or you're serving in ministry, these should be qualities or values that are evident in your life. The church needs people to step up to the plate and to take some initiative. These are the kinds of people that we need to be serving in the various ministries of the church. We often see qualities in people. When we see these qualities, we should encourage him or her to serve. Often we see other qualities, and we think that these people with these other qualities should be the ones who serve. Let's say somebody has a lot of money. Somebody is very good in business or something like that. Maybe somebody has a high education. They have PhD or master of whatever after their, you know, their initials. And so we think, well, this person is good in business, or this person is good in culture, this person is good in government, this person is good in education. So these are the kinds of people that we need to lead the church or be involved in various ministries. But really, these other virtues that we've already talked about here, diligence, recognition by the church, and faithful administration, those are far more important than your education or whatever money you might have or business acumen. We need to make sure that we're following the proper values here. If you don't have these virtues, well, then you should be working to develop them. And if you do have these virtues, then you should be active in serving God in the context of the local church. We need people like this to serve. And I hope that all of us are at least willing when we get that invitation, when that door opens, we don't just express interest in doing it, but we, as Titus here did, he took up the invitation. He said, yes, I'll go ahead. He had earnest care for people, and that's why he wanted to serve. And I trust that all of us have earnest care for God and for his people and for his church, and we would want to be involved in serving as well. Well, Paul is going to mention two more qualities that are very important. We'll go ahead and look at them. Let's see, not this coming Sunday, which will be Easter Sunday, but the Sunday after that, we'll go ahead then and finish out this context and look at two other virtues that it's important to have for those who serve the Lord. Well, let's close in